than the speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Holy hole in a donut!
I never said thank you.
And you'll never have to.
Welcome to another episode of Batman Superman Dawn of Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me is my co-host, Steven. Steven, how's it going?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Fantastic. We are doing a comic book review this week. It's an Elseworlds story. It's Superman Speeding Bullets, which Steven and I have been talking about doing for quite some time, but we wanted to bring in a guest to help us talk about this book. And it's a guest that most of our listeners will probably know. And it's actually, if you've listened to our Justice League Snyder Cut announcement, we talked about how this person sort of helped myself and also Steven to a degree sort of step back and give Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman a different look and really changed our opinion on the whole thing quite a bit. More so mine. I'm not going to speak for Steven, but so I thought, well, we got to have this guy on now. And I've had him on before, but it was for a Marvel podcast, and it was what I call the dark ages of podcasting because my co-host was an interesting individual back then, and it wasn't Steven, although Steven's quite interesting in his own right. But our guest is Scott McClellan from the DC Films Squadcast. I think I got that name right.
You got it completely right. You're good.
Well, the last time you were here was the Suicide Squadcast, so I'm like, okay, which one is it now? Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, a little rebranding we did in light of recent events that we thought would serve us well. So yeah,
makes sense. Yes, I'm sure it helps in a search engine not to have to type that in as often as possible. But yeah, it's cool. I like the name. It's all encompassing. It's awesome. I like it. So Scott, for our listeners that don't know who you are, I guess they don't listen to many podcasts. Just give us a brief rundown of your network and the shows plugging.
I can plug. Trust me. Yeah. I am the co-host and co-founder of the DC Film Squadcast, formerly the Suicide Squadcast. That was the flagship show of the Squadcast Media Network. My co-host Tim and I have been doing our show for coming up on 5 years now, discussing the DC Extended Universe movies and TV shows. And so we've been talking all DC for 5 years, and we are, as you alluded to earlier, we did start our show in light of the fact that we loved Man of Steel and we didn't hear enough positive talk around it on the internet. So we thought, well, instead of complaining about not hearing the show we wanted, why not we just go and be the show we want to be? And we have just sort of grown from there over the last 5 years.
Awesome. And I've listened to the Film Squadcast the most, I think, but I've dabbled in pretty much every show you have on the network. So I've dipped my toe into every show. So and I love what you guys do. So keep doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I got a comic off you early on when one of your winners.
Really? My God.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do those iTunes reviews giveaways.
Yeah.
What did we send you, by the way?
It was Smallville, the one with Batman. I can't remember what it's called for life of me. Volume 2, Season 11.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, I love it, yeah. So thank you for that.
So when we review it, we'll give them a shout out again.
Yeah.
Because without them, you probably wouldn't have that book. It's a great network, and if our listeners haven't listened to it, I can't recommend it highly enough. But I'm sure everybody that listens to the show has already listened to every show. But if you haven't, go do it. Before we get into our review of this particular book, we do have some bits of news to discuss, and we're glad Scott's here to discuss them with us. So, Stephen, I know you're more of the Superman guy. I mean, you like both, but you're more of the Superman guy. So we do have some Superman news, right?
Yeah, do you want to that first then?
Yeah, that was your second.
That's not my order on my show notes, Adam. So.
I know, but I like to go
You're just messing with me now, aren't you? So, basically, we finally got details of when Superman and Lois is going to shoot via Directors Guild of Canada's production list. So, the entire first season of the show will shoot between September 28th, 2020 and April 1st, 2021. So, I think Pagey on Twitter said he thinks it's going to round up to about 16 episodes, that because of the timing of the, you know, the schedule and stuff.
Sure, yeah. Makes sense. First of all, I mean, yeah. Obviously it's back in Vancouver with most of the other Arrowverse shows. But personally, I'd be even happier if it was filming in Toronto just because I live here. And because Toronto was one of the initial inspirations for Metropolis, so I'll just throw that out there. But Scott, what is your thought process on, you know, Superman and Lois as a potential show, or, you know, the show that's coming? And what just give me a give us a general thought on what you think of Tyler Hoechlin as Superman, because I'm not sure where you stand on that either. So.
I'm going to be diplomatic enough to say I'm not the biggest fan. He's okay. I mean, there isn't and I'm not blaming him. I would blame the direction he's been given. Mm-hmm. It's just a little too much of trying to be, in my opinion, Christopher Reeve light. Mm-hmm. Instead of, and I feel like he hasn't been given. He was never given the opportunity to try to be his own Superman. Mm-hmm. I feel like he was sort of pigeonholed into play it this way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to give the actor a hard time.
Sure.
So, and when it comes to that, I mean, that's why I don't talk a lot on the subject, is because I'm not the biggest fan. And so I'm also someone who doesn't feel the need to take to Twitter to, like, lambast something that I don't like. If I don't like it, guess what? I just choose not to watch it. And so,
fair point. Yeah.
And so, for me, looking at the Superman and Lois show, that's kind of where I am. I, especially after Crisis on Infinite Earths, I just kind of with Crisis and the end of Arrow, my enthusiasm for the CW shows is just kind of deflated. Mm-hmm. if that, like, I haven't even finished, except for Arrow, because I was going to watch that to the end, and there were only two episodes after Crisis. I actually haven't finished the former seasons of any of the other shows.
Okay.
Mm. Just simply out of I tried, and I just slowly just kind of was like, time ran out, I'll get to this later. And it just seemed, and for me, it was something I could always just sort of kick down the road, and I've still been kicking it down the road. So when it comes to Superman and Lois show, my opinion is it's not something that's got me personally enthused. But for those who love Tyler Hoechlin's Superman and who love this iteration and who still have that enthusiasm for the CW Arrowverse, well, good for you guys. Like, and that's my honest opinion. That gives you what you love. Great. You can go watch it. And for someone like me who's less enthused, no one is strapping me down Clockwork Orange style and making me watch it. So so it's not like I'm going to gripe about it.
Right. And then if you decide you can check it out at your own leisure whenever you want.
Exactly.
Awesome. I know Stephen is definitely looking forward to it. So we've got different ends of the spectrum, which is good. And I will watch anything Superman. So unless they, I don't know.
Bring in a certain someone back who's not.
I'd watch if Tom Welling actually came back and wore the suit.
I was talking about Dean Cain.
Oh, well, I mean, his politics aside, I'd probably watch, but whatever. I just won't.
He's not making friends politics. At the minute, though, is he?
Like, yeah, definitely. We also have sticking in the CW corner of the universe for a minute. We do have a new Batwoman finally, and the actress that is assuming the cape and cowl is, and I'm gonna botch this probably, but
I'm glad you're saying it. I thought I had to do it, so I'm glad now.
Yeah, no, I'll do it. I'll take the bullet. It's Javicia Leslie, I think that's how you pronounce it.
That's what I was gonna go for.
If she wants, she can tell me I'm wrong and I'll correct it. No problem. But she's taking over from Ruby Rose, who quit the role, or left, or however you want to phrase that. And she is playing not Kate Kane. She's playing a new iteration of the character, which is Ryan Wilder, I think, is what they're calling her.
Yeah, Ryan Wilder is the name that they've had floating around.
Yeah. Like,
even from the original story where they kind of announced the fact that they weren't just going to recast Kate Kane and were going to create a completely original character, they've been consistent with that name.
Right. All right, so we'll throw it over to you first, Scott. I know you're behind on Batwoman and everything else, but aside from Arrow. But what are your thoughts on this development and sort of going with a different character that's not Kate Kane?
That's the part that astounds me the most, is why not just recast Kate Kane? I have got nothing personal against the new actress, because she's being put in a difficult situation where the show's called Batwoman. You know, really, as far as Batwoman is concerned, there literally has only been one Batwoman. It's been Kate Kane, different iterations of Kate Kane, but still just Kate Kane. And so I feel bad for her that she's going to have to deal with that, you know, as like out of the gate. Like, she's going in a position of she has to prove herself. Because most people are looking at this whole situation going, why not just recast Kate Kane? Why do we have to create an entirely original character to take over the Batwoman mantle? And that's I feel bad for her. I was always of the opinion when I heard that Ruby Rose was going to leave, which didn't hurt my feelings too much, because I personally found her to be the weakest part of the show.
Yep.
I'm sorry. The actress whose name escapes me right now, who was playing Alice, was like the best thing to watch on that show. Rachel Scarston. Yeah. Thank you. Because I know her from Birds of Prey.
Me too.
She played Black Canary, you know?
I love that show.
Oh my, it has a special place, I will say that. And it's just like, she was killing it in the show. And I also have a fondness for Douglas Ray Scott, you know, going back to like Cinderella and all of that. So it's just like, I was okay with when Ruby Rose was leaving. I was just like, okay, just plop somebody else in the role and keep going with Kate Kane. I will admit that changing the character, it whatever dampened enthusiasm I may have had, that just almost like, it's like you might as well just drive a wooden stake into whatever I had left, because it's like, you mean now we've got to start all over again with a whole new lead with all these relationships. So it really feels like there's going to be like season one's going to be its own separate thing. Yeah. And then if the show is able to continue on, it's going to be like
Season 1.5.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be like, this is a different show. And season one is just kind of this island that sits out there.
Yeah. Season one will be pre-crisis.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stephen, what are your thoughts? I know you echo a lot of what Scott was saying in terms of
100%. Yeah.
The recharacterization, not even the recast, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the actress because I'm like you, Scott. I thought Ruby Rose was a bit bland, in all honesty. She didn't command the screen or anything. And I actually thought she was okay as Batwoman when she was in the mask, but when she was playing Kate Kane, she was just so boring. and dull. And I mean, I've never seen her in anything I've liked her in, I'll be completely honest with
you. You're pulling your punches there, Stephen, today.
But I'm okay with a new Batwoman in a sense, but I would rather that if they were adamant on having a new character, I'd still rather the recast Kate Kane and had her in two or three episodes to kind of do the handover. Or, you know, something happens to her and then she has to become Batwoman. It just really seems like a really strange move when, I mean, I won't spoil what happens at the end of season one, but the way season one ends, the way it ended, it's almost like, well, we're going to have a time jump now. And we're going to be like, well, what happened to that? What happened to that? And everything's going to be told in. It's going to be like when Superman were wanting season one of Supergirl and it was like shadowy and shots from, you know, from behind the cape and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
I'm just a bit concerned about what it means in that respect. I mean, I feel like they'll probably reboot it for the better in a sense, but it's one of them where I'm kind of like, what are you doing here? So, I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. If they had just cast these actresses, Kate Kane, I'd have been fine with it. I don't care if they changed the race. It wouldn't have bothered me. They could have got around it somehow.
Yeah, here's my take. In terms of the recharacterization, and that's what I'm calling it, of the, you know, Batwoman putting a new character in the cowl, that just on the face of it seems a little weird when, again, you could have recast Kate Kane. And look, if they wanted to use this actress, I've got zero problem with that. Like, I could care less what, you know, color her skin is. I really don't care. She could have been from Korugar for all I care, and they could have told me it was a Batwoman. But that being said, on the acting side, I'll straight up say it. This actress, Javitia, what's the last name? I got the first name right now. I can't remember her last name. Leslie. Javitia Leslie. I've seen her in God Friended Me, and she is great. I really like her. I'll be even more blunt than Steven and Scott. This is an upgrade casting-wise. this actress can actually emote and handle a range of emotions. So that will be a breath of fresh air. How they handle the plot threads that were left dangling, that remains to be seen. I don't know how they're going to do it, but we'll have to wait and see. But again, my interest is where Scott is sort of, you know, they drove a stake through his interest. My interest is piqued just because I like the new actress and I want to see how they get themselves out of this situation that they've now put themselves in, or if they're able to do it. So I'm still looking forward to it because I did enjoy season one, and I, again, to me, Rachel Scarston was the scene stealer. She stole the show. Yeah. So for me, I think she'll be able to carry me personally through any bumps that the start of this new season has. So I'm still looking forward to it.
I'm just concerned about the lack of personal relationships and connections because
the
season one and all the characters they introduced were so predicated on this is Kate's sister. This is Kate's stepsister. This is Kate's dad. This is Kate's lover. It's like they were all revolving around Kate. And so the show is going to have to take a hard left to fit a different character into a dynamic that was literally built revolving around Kate.
That's going to be the biggest issue for sure. Absolutely.
I'm telling you, there's going to be a big time jump and it's going to be.
Thankfully I'm not the writer of it. So,
disappearance is going to be a mystery, didn't they? But it's like, well, we already don't know where Bruce Wayne is. So you're adding a second one.
Those cousins are quite mysterious. So their idea of a summer vacation is we're going to leave and see you later. But we'll see. We'll see how they work themselves out of the situation. But I'm looking forward to this new actress. That's one aspect of it that I'm eager for. The last piece of news we have is I purposely kind of switched up the order because I wanted to touch on this last. God bless HBO Max. I think we could just say that off the top of
this. Yes.
But in addition to giving us Zack Snyder's Justice League, we are getting a spin-off of the Batman. So what's happening is Matt Reeves is going to executive produce a Gotham City Police Department drama series that is not off in its own little island, but in fact set within his version of Gotham City. From what I understand from the not the press release, but later editions from the Hollywood Reporter, I think it was, they said that this show will take place before the events of Matt Reeves' The Batman. So what I want to ask you guys is, do you think that that means that Batman will have yet to exist, or will he be, because the movie is rumored to be a year two story. So does that leave room where he's in year one and the events that are taking place are while Batman is in year one? How do you think that's going to be handled? But my other thing that I want to mention before you guys both give your thoughts is the co-creator with Matt Reeves, the showrunner basically is, Stephen, do you have his, do you have the
Terrence Winter.
That's, thank you, Scott. And he, I mean, that name, in addition to Matt Reeves, because you had me at Matt Reeves and set in his Gotham. So you had me there. But then you add the guy who's had a hand in working on The Sopranos and it was Boardwalk Empire, I believe, right? With
He was the showrunner. He was a showrunner for Boardwalk Empire, which just makes me super excited.
And Michael Shannon was in that. Remember Zod? So you know.
Yeah, and Charlie Cox, Daredevil.
Yeah, he was Daredevil. So, yeah. So there's all kinds of connections. There's multiverse connections everywhere. But yeah, those two names, like to me, just if I could fast forward to watching this thing right now, I'd be tempted, depending on what I'd be missing, I'd be tempted to do it. But, you know, one of the things that I want to also get your thoughts on, I've heard the complaint that, well, isn't this just Gotham? And my reaction was, no, it's not. Because Gotham was essentially Smallville for Batman. This is not that. When I read this press release, I look at that and say, oh, so it's the Gotham City Central comic book, basically, set in Matt Reeves' movie universe. That's my thought. So I'm super excited. And like I said, if I could watch this yesterday, I would have. And we would have been doing a review on the first episode. But we're not, so here we are. So, Scott, you being the guest of honor, what's your take on this interesting news, fantastic news?
I would co-sign that it's being fantastic. I mean, I'm going to plug myself right now. We had a very in-depth discussion on this on episode 265 of the DC Film Squadcast. Check it out. Download it today if you haven't already listened. But my thoughts are this. One, the point about it being a prequel came from a tweet that Justin Kroll tweeted out. And what you can always tell when they do this is whatever they've gotten officially is what's in their story. Right. If they follow up with a tweet, that means that's like a rumor they're hearing.
Okay.
Like that's like there's that way you navigate the internet that goes, if it's in the story, it's official. If it's in a tweet later on, it's like something they heard, which means they couldn't vet it enough to put it actually in the story.
Right.
So we don't know when this series is taking place. All we know is that it's taking place in the world that Matt Reeves is establishing in his Batman film, which I'm excited about, especially if it goes the Gotham Central route, which that's what we all thought Gotham was going to be when it was first announced.
Yeah.
It was kind of what we were led to believe Gotham was going to be when it was first announced. But Gotham was on network TV.
Yeah.
This is freaking HBO Max. Yeah. With a pedigree of someone who wrote The Wolf of Wall Street, worked on The Sopranos. Wrote The Wolf of Wall Street, worked on The Sopranos, and was the showrunner for Boardwalk Empire. You're telling me that I can get a seedy, corrupt Gotham City television series a la Boardwalk Empire? Shut up and take my money if you didn't already have it. I mean, what I am hoping This is no insider information. This is just what I'm hoping is that we get the Batman is that rumor. Batman is that ghost. Mm. And what we're seeing is all the stuff we don't get to see in a Batman movie. Because when we're in a Batman movie, we're following Batman. We're following all the stuff that Batman's doing. This television series, from what I'm reading, sounds like what else is happening when we're not following Batman.
Right. Yeah.
And what I'm hoping is that this focuses on the mob, like the corrupt police, the corrupt city officials, and all the mob families. I'm like, if you don't use Rupert Thorne, Stromwell, you know, Tony Zucco, you know, Falcone, if you're not focusing on all that mess, you know, it's like, that is what is so primed. And maybe you get to see, you know, we don't even know if Gordon in the movie is going to be, is he going to be Lieutenant Gordon? Is he already going to be commissioner? Like, we don't even know, like, where Gordon is in his career at this point. So the possibility to focus on the cops and the side characters, you know, we talked about on the podcast, maybe we get, like, guest appearances by a Harvey Dent, you know, every once in a while. Not a regular character, but let's get to know Harvey Dent before he becomes,
you know,
Two-Face, you know, this kind of thing. And so that's what I'm hoping for the series is give me that world of Gotham when we're not worrying about baby Batman or we're not worrying about Batman himself. Yeah. Let me see what the rest of Gotham does. Even if it is a prequel, because the movie is supposed to be like a year or two, give me a world where Batman is still an urban legend and I'm seeing everyone in Gotham operating as if he's some sort of boogeyman, you know, bedtime story.
But
give me the grit and the complexity and the drama of a Boardwalk Empire. Hot damn.
Just thinking about it makes me happy. So before I get Steven's thoughts on this, Scott, you mentioned Jim Gordon. Do you think he appears at all in this show?
I think that would be an incredible get. I mean, here's what I said. Jeffrey Wright is not opposed to TV. The man's already in his third season of Westworld on HBO. I mean, we're also living in a world where streaming, I mean, HBO is already not just television. HBO is like in its own plane of existence.
And we've
moved past this world where there's movie actors and there's television actors. Would I love for him to show up? Yeah. Now, could I imagine it being like a guest spot or a cameo or, you know, or a, you know, special appearance by? Absolutely. You know, I would appreciate even that. But if he's not in the show, fine. Yeah. You've got so many other characters and worlds that you can explore that you wouldn't need Gordon in the show. Because once again, it's about taking the opportunity to focus on the characters that you wouldn't get to see in your average Batman movie or Batman story.
Yeah.
Because even in Gotham Central, Gordon wasn't the commissioner in that book because it was post No Man's Land.
Yes, he was retired, wasn't he? Or quote-unquote.
Oh, or he was kind of forced out, you know, like, you know, and that kind of thing. So the idea is you don't need Gordon. You can do it. You know, here's what I want. Give me Christmas Allen. Give me a proper Renee Montoya.
Give me
a real Harvey Bullock.
Yeah.
You know. That's the kind of and watch that world play out. That's where I fall on that.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with you on just about everything you said there. So I cannot do that. Steven, where are you sitting with all this?
I'm just thinking, actually, whatever happened to Renee Montoya on Gotham? She just disappeared.
Just disappeared after season one.
I loved Gotham. I thought it had a bit of balance issues first two seasons, and I think they just went for the zaniness in the end, and I think it totally worked. So I loved that show. But obviously, like you said, Adam, people saying this is, well, haven't we already seen this with Gotham? And it's like, this is not what Gotham was. Like you said, Gotham was like Smallville for Batman. it was a little bit different. I'm excited for it. I think it'd be really cool. I mean, I'm actually want to be the odd duck out in the Batman. I'm very cautious of the Batman film because I don't like the suit, for one. And some of the stuff I'm hearing, I'm not massively happy about. But I'm going to wait and see. I'm not making up my mind before I see it or anything. But yeah, I don't think I could have put it any better than what Scott said, to be honest. Just the urban legend thing sounds amazing if they did that. I always love when Batman, when people don't think he's real. I think it makes him a bit cooler. Because I think when he's out in like, you know, some of the... he does work in the Justice League and stuff, but that's obviously a years later into his career, isn't it? But
yeah,
my favourite Batman book's Year One as well, and he's pretty much like... You know, there's that bit where Flass is telling that story, ain't he, about how he like shot him and bullet went through him, but he actually went through his cape, and then no one really believes him, do they? Like, thinking this thing's real. So I just love that aspect of it. That's another character that could appear, Flass.
Flass could come in there into play. Too. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be interesting. So, I mean... Give me more information at this point, like DC fandom, which is, I guess, where they might give us a little bit more, you know, morsels of info.
Yeah.
But, like, can that thing get here like tomorrow? That's another one where it's like,
I need that now. I do think that they let this information out earlier because I think there's going to be some big stuff and they don't want stuff to get lost in the sea of news.
That's probably a good way to think about it, but
I think it's also a case of DC and Warner Media and AT&T realize that they own the news cycle right now. Because as has been commented on enough of our show and on the vodka streams on Film Junkie I've been doing a lot of recently, it's like Marvel's got nothing else to talk about. They took their shot. Yeah. And now, and who predicted a global pandemic? I mean, honestly. So AT&T and Warner Media are just like, we own this right now. Yeah. And so even though they're dropping news even before fandom gets here, it's like the perfect type of hype building. They are just feeding the monster. So by the time that we get to fandom, we're going to lose our freaking minds.
And God knows what we're going to get at Justice Con with, you know, with especially when Zack Snyder has his panel, right? So
yeah, Saturday night for that one. Yeah.
I'm willing to bet just that we're at minimum going to get maybe a photograph at minimum, because he'll probably he's the master of teasing, you know, things out. So.
Yeah, I won't be shocked if a shadow drops another one of those like teaser clips.
Well, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Just drop as much as he wants. Just you know, drop it all. Except for,
if he
wants to drop the movie into like our Google Drive boxes, I mean, I'll take it. But I don't think he's going to do that. But yeah, anything else, I'm game for. So yeah, we're all on board for Gotham City Central or GCPD or whatever it's called.
They should just call it that. Gotham City Central.
It would go good with our Batman.
It would.
You know, if you want to have a tie-in, Warner Media, by all means, let us know. But yeah, we're either way, whatever they call it, we're in for it. Unless they call it George Clooney's bat nipples, then I'm out. But other than that, I'm good. That takes care of the news. So let's get right into the main attraction, which is Speeding Bullets, the Elseworlds graphic novel that we are going to discuss and share our thoughts on. So, when did you guys, you know, sort of get a hold of this story for the first time? Because I think upon my re-entry to comic books or to collecting comic books, I think it was the fifth graphic novel that my comic book guy recommended to me. He was very strategic in hooking me in, and I'm still hooked. And so that's when I got a hold of it. And so it was fairly early in my re-entry to comics. But Scott, this one has a special place for you, doesn't it?
Yes, it is actually my very first Elseworlds book I ever owned. I'm OG. I was having a Mallrat day in 1993, and I plucked this sucker off of a spinner rack at a bookstore in the mall. The cover grabbed me because, I mean, it's this iconic Superman image from Superman number one, but with Batman's costume. So I'm seeing, Superman across the banner, but I'm seeing Batman on the cover in a Superman pose. And, you know, I'm 11 when this book comes out. And so I don't even know what Elseworlds are. Like, that's not an imprint. It's not a label that at that time I was familiar with. Yeah. I just see Superman with a flying Batman on the cover. And my brain just went, what is this? And I plucked it off the spinner rack. And so I actually own a first print OG issue of this book. Now, I didn't pull that out when I reread it for
Of course not.
No, that stays in a bag and a board in a long box.
Damn straight.
It was reprinted recently in the Elseworlds Superman Volume 1 trade, which, with it being the first, I think this actually, you know, like Gotham by Gaslight is kind of the official first Elseworlds story, and it's the first Batman Elseworlds story. So I do believe that Speeding Bullets has the moniker of being the very first solo Superman Elseworlds story.
Awesome. I wasn't aware of that, but that's awesome. You mentioned being the OG, you were there, you grabbed it on based on the cover. Well, when I, because I was like I said, when I got back into comics, I was just like trying to navigate my way through. So I'd go into the shop, and he, as soon as he seen me, he'd go and pull something that he would think that I like. So he hands me this graphic novel, and I said, wait a minute, why does it say Superman? And I went through the process that you went through, but I was asking him questions. I'm like, wait a minute. This is a repurposed, you know, Superman number one image, but it's Batman. But the title of the book says Superman. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Because Elseworlds, even when I got back into comics, was a foreign concept to me. So he gave me the gist of the story, and I won't go into it because we're going to talk about it here in a second. But he gives me the general bullet points, no pun intended. But I said, so basically, if I had to put an analogy on it, this would be like, you know, meeting a girl, you know, starting to date her, and then a couple months in, finding out that she's both a Maxim model and a Playboy model. I'm taking this book. Sign me up. and you'll get that analogy, hopefully, by the end of this thing. But that was my sort of kind of rationale to it. So, Stephen, how did you get into this book? Like, where did you...
Well, I got back into comics around the time when Spider-Man came out. Which one was that? 2001, was it?
2002.
Around the same time, right. I got back in as well.
Yeah, and I went to get a Spider-Man comic from it was a place like Forbidden Planet. Do you know what Forbidden Planet is?
Yeah.
It was a bit like Forbidden Planet, but it wasn't Forbidden Planet. And I saw it goes a good place. I went to get a Spider-Man comic, and I actually saw Batman Year One, and I thought, oh, I'm buying that instead. So I bought that.
Good choice.
yeah. And then I went back the day after, and I said, oh, have you got any other Batman books in? Because it didn't have like a ton of books. I just had a few. And he goes, oh, yeah, we've got this. And he passed me it. And I went, oh, what's this? And he says, basically, I won't say what it is, but he told me what it was about, like, with you. And I thought, oh, yeah, so I'll buy that. So this was the first Elseworlds I ever read. But he told me the concept of Elseworlds, so I went in knowing what I was getting into, basically. Yeah. And then, I know this isn't part of the same thing, but I went in the day after and got Gotham by Gaslight as well, so... I kept going back day after day for a bit.
You were in there 3 days in a row, this guy's like, I got another one, we're good.
Yeah, ka-ching! That Ferrari.
Yeah, that's it.
But yeah, so, I just... It took me back a bit when I saw the cover as well, like, whoa. Because then I recognised the classic image, so...
Yeah.
It one of them again, yeah. So
I like the fact that you're more of the Superman guy, but you went in there and came out with three Batman related books.
Yeah. It's
kind of funny.
I already had some Superman stuff, so I guess I didn't need it.
So essentially, this book, the general, very general point of it is that Kal-El's spaceship lands on Earth, but it doesn't land in Smallville, Kansas. It lands in Gotham City. And instead of being found by Jonathan and Martha Kent, there he's found by Thomas and Martha Wayne, as well as Alfred Pennyworth, who was driving them wherever they were going. And what we see is basically the events of Batman's origin play out. And what we have is, for the majority of the book, for a good two-thirds, I would say, is Kal-El as Bruce Wayne slash Batman. And just on that alone, as I was rereading, and you start saying, so, you know, there's a moment where it's going to be weird talking about it, because Bruce, which is Kal, it's kind of weird, sees his parents get shot, you know, and in that rage, that's when the heat vision clicks in.
It's my most memorable moment in this book.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the one panel that is seared in my memory is young Bruce blowing the head off of Joe Chill with his heat vision.
Sucks to be him. He got off easy in the main continuity. This time around, not so much. But again, that image, when you see that, I'm like, and I remember the first time I saw it, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is different. But as I was reading, and as, you know, the story developed further, and, you know, as Bruce adopts the Bat persona and goes out at night as Batman, I started thinking to myself, well, considering Kal-El's powers of, you know, he's got this extra level of sight that humans don't have, he can fly, you know, that is very comparable with attributes of a bat.
Yeah.
So it makes for the fact that, you know, the idea that Kal-El is basically becomes Batman actually makes a lot of sense when you consider his power set and how closely they mimic certain attributes of a bat. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, well, do you know, the panel that always sticks in my head is the one where he's flying with the bats. I absolutely love that.
Yes, yeah.
That drawing. Yeah. The artwork in this is absolutely magnificent anyway, but
yeah.
That's the moment that always stuck in my head. And it's funny, actually, because when I was watching BVS in the cinema and Bruce Wayne starts flying, because at first I was like, what's going on here? And then obviously he says it's a dream, thank God. But I kind of had that in my head. That kind of popped into my head for a second when I first watched BVS, you know, flying with the bats.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I had to, I just that you brought that up, when I watched it the first time with a friend of mine, because we always go on like the Thursday night, Friday screening. And then the Sunday, which was, I think, the Easter Sunday, after we had our meal, I basically took the whole family to go watch it again. And when that scene happened where he's, you know, flying upwards out of the cave with the bats, my brother-in-law, you know, leans over and says, what's going on here? I said, no, don't worry. Just watch. Batman can't fly. We're good. Don't worry.
Me and my mate looked at each other like, what's going on?
It's like, no, we're good, just watch. But yeah, so that was an interesting thing to me about how much, you know, Kal-El being Batman actually fits. But another thing that I found really sort of noteworthy was how obsessive he was, because he had that room where he had all the newspaper clippings. You know, with all the different crimes and such. And one of the things I thought of, like, I'm like, he's obsessed to the levels that I equated it with Michael Keaton's Batman. I don't know if you guys
got that sense
at all, but I instantly thought of, this for whatever reason reminded me of Michael Keaton's Batman. So I found that interesting. What I gravitated to, and I know, you know, this is my personal favorite look. I'm a Batman with the oval kind of guy. Like it's the Batman that I grew up with, the iconography. So seeing him in that outfit, I was like, okay, I'm in. And one of my favorite pages, the one that you were saying, Scott, with where he burns, Joe Chill to smithereens, is one.
Joe Chill deserved it.
No, absolutely, 100%.
Well, he shot a kid. I'm sorry. That sealed the deal. He shot him. And the bullet just happened to go. Bing.
It's the same. It's the same with the guy that kills the dog in John Wick. Same idea.
Oh God, that big. It was a beagle as well, and I used to have a beagle, so that really upset me, that when I first watched John Wick.
But the other image was the first appearance of Batman when he, like, it's that splash page where he's, like, descending. And I just thought, oh, my God, what an amazing image. And even when he's, like, flying with the criminals and, like, threatening to drop them, it wasn't the same image, but also it was very similar to... Was it the Detective 27 image, he's holding the criminal and they're gliding through the skyline.
That's the cover for Detective 27.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it evoked that kind of. I mean, well, obviously it wasn't the same, but it evoked that imagery for me. So I really liked that page as well. But aside from really getting the Batman aspects of it, I think spot on. What I found really well done was the transition into the Superman portion of the book as well. Like it all, for me anyway, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. When we start getting introduced to Lex Luthor and Lois Lane, it all felt like a seamless transition and introduction. Whereas in a lesser writer and artist's, hands and words, I think it could have came off as forced, but it never did for me. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on that aspect of it. So Scott, what did you think how do you think they balanced the Batman and Superman worlds and portions?
Okay. There was one thing that didn't bother me when I didn't pick up on it when I first read it back in the 90s, but I picked on it today that I find is a criticism. And then the second thing where it stops working for me, I will admit it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me when I was 11, and it still doesn't work for me when I'm 38. So I have a definite opinion about something.
Okay.
I liked the way they worked in Lex coming to Gotham. I thought that was very natural. I liked how Perry was brought to the Gazette from Daily Planet, because if there's not Superman stopping Lex in Metropolis, Lex is going to get to kind of... run the show. I mean, that worked really well, and that's always the danger in these Elseworld stories when you try to incorporate, when you kind of do one of these pastiche characters and you start to bring in someone else's supporting cast, is how well do you do that? I thought all of that was going well. I thought Bruce/Superman immediately becoming a klutz when he saw Lois, that made me roll my eyes.
Yeah.
That was like, wow, you just threw that in there.
I didn't mind it, mate.
I minded it because it just, that, it felt so forced without any kind of setup whatsoever.
Right. I know what you're saying, but I think he's so taken aback by it, isn't he? That's what it's supposed to be.
No, fine, but it'd be more natural than...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Than that.
I know
what you mean. And then the rest of the book, I like, especially like the reveal that the narrator we've had the whole time was Lois.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I love that reveal. But I will tell you, when the book loses me and has always lost me since I was 11, was when Lex/Joker walks into the Gazette offices. And from that point on in the book, when it's revealed that Lex Luthor is the Joker... That has always been a jump the shark for me.
Is it because he was the Joker or because of how overboard he goes?
When I was 11, it was the fact that he was the Joker. Like, I was like, really? You're trying too hard. Then this time around, as I was reading it, the book, like when the private army suddenly shows up and they're like firing tanks and blimps, and like it goes off the rail. Like, it's this well-paced story, well-paced. And then it's like, as soon as it's revealed that Joker, that Lex is Joker, it just goes off the rails and it just never quite recovers for me. It's like, it felt like it was like, oh, my page count's running out. I need to wrap this up now. And for me, that's when the book stops working. So if like the first 2/3 of the book, I'm on board. Yeah. And it just loses me in that last third.
Do you think that's a scenario that could have benefited from the story being longer?
Yes. Okay. I feel like, I really do feel like that was page count. I really do feel like it was, we've paced it out well, but we have to get to our big action beat. Like, this book has to end on a bang because it's ultimately a Superman story. And I've spent so much time telling a well-paced, crafted story that, dang, I gotta do action, action, action all at the end. Yeah. And if it had been, if it had been, you know, 25% longer, I have a feeling that J.M. DeMatteis could have massaged that out a little bit.
Yeah, because he's an extremely strong writer.
He's a very strong writer. I mean, even the animated movies he's been writing recently in the last 2-3 years have been some of the better ones of late. Yeah. And this just, that has always been where the book falls apart for me.
I can actually see with that you know, point of view and that complaint, I can actually go along with it. I think you make some good points there for sure.
When you said we were doing this book, I said to you straight away, didn't I, this book don't have a middle. I feel like it has a beginning and an end. It needed a middle.
Yeah, that's a fair complaint. Yeah, I mean, it does seem very abrupt with how quick they go from, all right, we've introduced Lex, now we're setting up a story, and oh, by the way, he's the Joker.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the explanation for why he's the Joker, I was on board with all of that. That, like, you know, the chemical plant, the whole nine yards, was very, very much Jack Nicholson-esque, reminded me. I mean, to me, his Lex, especially the art, kind of leads me in this direction. But this iteration of Joker Lex and who knows what the kids would do to amalgamate the two nowadays. But the name, I'm not even going to try. But art-wise, it reminds me of like an amalgamation of Daredevil's Kingpin with Jack Nicholson's Joker.
The Lex is very much John Byrne's Lex Luthor from the post-crisis reboot. That's definitely where they were going with that Lex.
Yeah. And I totally loved his, you know, his boardroom sort of maneuvering and stuff. That was great. But you're right in the sense that where it kind of goes overboard is when he loses it as the Joker, because it's such a sharp turn, you know what I mean, from what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when Jack Nicholson was the Joker, there was a certain point where he was full nuts even when he wasn't in the makeup, right? But here it's like, okay, I'm an evil SOB, you know, in the boardroom, and behind the scenes. But now, hey, the minute I'm even more overboard when I'm in this garb and with this look, and so yeah, it felt like it was too abrupt from one sort of quote unquote persona to the next. And the other, and again, I think this is timing as well for me, where it kind of goes overboard from the Bruce transition from Batman to Superman. It's like one pep talk from Lois and all right, I'm Superman now.
Oh, no, no. You didn't even let me get there where the costume just comes out of.
Yeah.
Nowhere, and it's like this weird.
Yeah,
it reminded me of the Eradicator.
Yeah,
it was basically the Eradicator costume without the goggles. And I'm like, where did the House of Elcrest come from? You didn't establish that at all. But you're right. It was rushed. It was like one pep talk and suddenly years and years of rage. And now...
Went away. Yeah, it's like...
It just went away. Because I got laid.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but you're probably right. But no, my thing too was, like you said, where's the costume come from? Like, where's that? Where is that all? In this universe, where's that? Because we didn't see what Jor-El and Lara looked like, so we don't know if that was a family thing, or like that wasn't explained. And it was just when I read that scene where she's talking him down from his violent ways and all that, you know what I got a flashback to? Remember that scene in Green Lantern where Hal Jordan says, "Well, I don't think I'm fearless enough. I can't do this." And Blake Lively gives him a nice pep talk. Now, Brett, listen. If Blake Lively gave me a pep talk, I'd do whatever she tells me to do. I'll just throw that out there. But
no lie.
Yeah. Aside from that fact, this just seemed like, again, because what we were presented with was this obsessive Bruce Wayne / Kal-El who, you know, for God's sake, he keeps newspaper clippings of all the crime. You know, that's how obsessive he is. And all that is washed away because Lois says, you can do so much better with your abilities than just, you know, breaking criminals' hands. Well, she's not wrong, but it just came out too quickly. So
it needed to be double the size to me, this book. Yeah. I think if it had been double the size, it would have, I think they could have explored her.
Well, 100 pages, no problem. Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's where you guys are, I think we're all in agreement. That's where it loses a little bit of the luster is in that third act is where.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's where it stops being basically Speeding Bullets is a Batman story. But if Batman had Superman's powers.
Yeah.
Because yes, it's the great what if Kal-El landed in Gotham City, you know, instead of Kansas. But that means he gets the psychology of Batman. So we really are talking about Bruce Wayne. But if Bruce Wayne had Superman's abilities, and it loses and it abandons that in the third act for Silver Age style Superman wham bam action.
Yeah,
I think it needed something where we actually got to see him discovering his Kryptonian, you know, like actually because he sees the ship, but he almost needed a hologram Jor-El scene, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
you know, like from Superman the animated series where he touches that box, that he needed that kind of moment. And you just don't get it.
I think. To go to this area of Superman story, what it needed to show was he needed to have a scene where he discovers his heritage and, you know, he sees a hologram Jor-El and Lara and they talk about, you know, if there's some sort of line where Jor-El is more non-violent, you know, and there's some spiel about that in there. Whereas, like, I get it. Lois is great. He loves Lois and he's enamored with her. And she's drawn very well. She looks good in this book. I get all that, you know, 100% on board. But when you've had 20 plus years, because he's about probably what, late 20s, early 30s in this story, by the time he becomes Batman /Superman. Yeah. So you can't erase 30 years of rage just because, oh, look, there's a beautiful girl that I'm smitten with comes walking by. You know, like, that just doesn't happen. You know, it's a more gradual progression. So I think it needed something, and it would have been great if it was tied in with him learning about his heritage and Jor-El being this nonviolent person who, you know what I mean, who tried to sort of better Krypton by showing them a more positive, hopeful way forward, and that didn't happen. That would have then informed, you know, his changeover a lot better.
And this might be just my own personal bias, but it almost feels like you needed a Jor-El speech a la what Russell Crowe gives in Man of Steel, where it's like, the point of you being here was to make this place better.
The point
of you being here was to give the people hope. Like, I could see that kind of pep talk.
Yeah. I think, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you had that, sorry, no, you go on. I'll go.
No, but I'm saying you have what Lois says to kind of get the ball rolling, and then he gets like the 1-2 with Jor-El kind of giving him like the full, you know, the, because you even get that in a Burns Man of Steel where, you know, he sees the vision of Jor-El.
Yes. Because
the ship is communicating with him like telepathically. Like, I do feel like what you needed was a Jor-El you needed Ghost Dad. You really needed Ghost Dad.
Yeah.
Because I think if he'd have had that, he could have had the final act, so I think he had to get his ass handed to him as well. So if you could have had him some more get his ass handed to him early on, and then he has that conversation, and then he goes into the final battle, and he's inherently good and doesn't kill him, then it would have made more sense and been more. It would have felt more like a complete arc rather than him just, like you say, just going, "Oh yeah, this girl don't want me to be bad, so I'm not going to be bad." That type thing.
Yeah, it's like she gave an ultimatum. You know, we could be together, but not if you're running around breaking the criminal's wrists and fingers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like I said, I think it's missing Jor-El. It's missing about 50 pages that would have made it. I think if you added another, you know, 30 to 50 pages, this could have been a nearly perfect story.
Yeah, or maybe you didn't even need to add another 50 pages to this book. You just needed an issue 2.
You needed this
to be more than just a one shot.
You needed a Superman, more Superman centric issue. Yeah.
Didn't they have like limits on how many pages they let Elseworlds be at a time or something? Wasn't that? Isn't that why they were quite short, the early ones?
You know what? These were also printed in prestige editions, yeah. So it was already like the nicer covers. I mean,
yeah,
this is already. Technically, if you look at this, this would have been advertised as like a 60-page, you know, a 60-page special.
So I'm going to just propose that we ask for a Black Label redo of this, where they have more issues and they can expand the story. That would be I'd be all for that. But all right. So I mean, we covered the gist of our thoughts. Is there anything you guys want to add before we kind of rate this thing and give a final grade to it? Scott, anything else you want to?
I would say I feel like this is an Elseworlds concept that is primed for a redo. I don't feel like you can do another comic because I feel like too many people would point and go, "Oh, you're just redoing Speeding Bullets."
Yeah.
Even though I feel like there's a way to, I still feel like the story needs to be retold in a way that fixes the issues that we've discussed. I almost feel like if you did one of those direct-to-video animated movies.
Oh yeah.
You stole my idea.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Stephen. But you know, it's like that cool. Because they've already proven to themselves, they've already proven to the audience that they're willing to make adjustments.
Have you seen Hush?
Well, I have, and I'm someone who doesn't hate on it. Okay.
No, but that's an adjustment, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I didn't like the twist, I'll be honest, but I liked the film. Of course.
So, but once again, like I said, I mean, imagine getting J.M. DeMatteis, who's written several of these animated films, to write the film version of this.
Yeah.
I mean, Judd Winnick got to write the Under the Red Hood adaptation.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, take someone who you already know has the chops to write a screenplay. Get him to, and who knows how he feels about this book. Does he feel the same way? Does he feel like, "Oh, I was rushed. I needed more time"? You know, I don't know. But I look at what they did with Red Sun. You know what? They made some changes. I was okay with the changes.
Yeah, me too.
I thought they worked well for changing the graphic novel into, you know, a movie. And that was taking something that was 3 issues long and condensing it into a movie. This is something that is probably the size of 1 issue of Red Sun, or maybe 2 issues of Red Sun. And getting it to fill in the same runtime, I could imagine some of these time issues we're talking about being alleviated. Like, this is the most direct way to say, yes, we're doing Speeding Bullets again, but give them the time to flesh it out and maybe make it more natural in its arc. Because I think, Steven, what you said, you lost the arc, I think is the perfect way of putting it.
Yeah.
I think the animated idea is like, because I was thinking the same thing earlier. I was almost thinking of done Gotham by Gaslight, which that's one I want that keen on, actually. I thought the book was brilliant. I want that keen on the animated film. Loved Red Sun, though, both the book and the animated. I feel like, do you think like this would be the next one? You do, because thinking of all the Elseworlds, and this is quite well known, isn't it? You know, around the comic fans. So.
I would do this one, but like if we're talking about which one would I do next, personally, I'd do Kingdom Come Verbs, but that's just me.
Yeah, don't you think that's not quite, it isn't, although it's an Elseworlds, it's not like so much of an Elseworlds that it's,
yeah,
like
I get what you're saying. The
you
concept.
Get what I'm saying,
is,
don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
I mean, it's technically Elseworlds, but it's more alternate future.
Yeah, I just
it's
wanna,
not
yeah.
like Gotham by Gaslight or Red Sun, which is yeah. the what if stories.
Yeah, yeah. That's what. I wanted to do Kingdom Come. It's my favorite comic book ever, so I'd be happy to see him do that. But I think like this, if they're going to do another Elseworlds, this is like the next one you'd probably do.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with both of you. I think I'd love to see an animated adaptation of this. I think where you could flesh out some more, and then hopefully those you know page count issues and could be alleviated. So, but yeah, you signed me up for that for sure. So Scott and Steven, you both made an excellent suggestion, and if anybody from Warner Brothers is listening to this, take it. We won't charge royalties. You can have it. But all right. So we've gone through everything. So now it's time for the.
I do have one last comment.
Oh, okay, yeah, go ahead.
This might be my favorite Batman suit ever in comics because I just absolutely love it. Well, I like that it covers his face. I think it just look. You know, you mentioned the Burton thing earlier. I feel like this is very Burton, even though it's grey. It all just feels very bad.
And this was 93, right? So
yeah, it was 93. So it's post Batman Returns.
Yeah, so clearly influence is probably on their minds. And like I said, I'm a sucker for Batman with a yellow oval. And again, that to me, that shot of him, like I said, that first shot of Batman, the full page spread, if that could be a poster framed on my wall, it would be already on my wall. That's how much I like it. So you won't get any argument from me on the suit. But with all that said, we've now come to the not always fun part of the show where we have to rate something. We haven't done too many comics, so how do you want to do this, Stephen? How do you want to...
Don't we normally do a 5 rating?
Do we? Okay, the number.
I mean, if Scott would rather do letters,
Okay, Scott, you're the special guest. We'll let you decide. Would you rather do it out of 5 or a letter grade?
5.
All right. With that being said, Scott, where would you land on this book?
I'd say this is a solid 3. I think, let me explain my reasoning here, because a 3 for me is, was I entertained? Yes.
Yeah.
But could it be improved? Absolutely. So, you know, it's a nice average book. You know, you've got a good, strong 2 acts that fall apart in the 3rd act that really, like you were saying, really is more like we got an act 1 and act 2 in like a 2-page act 3, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that the way the story just kind of rushes at the end really, for me, overall hurts my overall enjoyment of the book. The concept is amazing. It is a great Elseworlds concept that just couldn't carry the ball over the goal line.
Awesome. Well said. Steven?
Yeah, I'm at a 3 as well. I was, when we were going to do letter grades, I was trying to equate what a 3 would be in letter grades. So I'm glad you said to do a 5 rating. I don't think I can say much more other than I feel like visually it's like one of the most stunning books like ever. But like Scott says, it's got act 1, act 2, and then the shortest act 3 in the world. So it needed a middle, and that would probably bump. I think if it had a middle, I think it probably would be around a 5. And up there with Red Sun and Gotham by Gaslight, you know. I mean, Gotham by Gaslight is probably about same size as this, isn't it?
Gotham by Gaslight is a small book.
Even smaller than this thing? Because I don't feel like that has any of the issues this book has. I feel like that perfectly goes.
Oh, I love that book, but yeah, that's another, yeah.
But yeah. So three out of five.
Fair enough. I'm going to go slightly different. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. And that's just because the art is so damn good that I just can't stop looking at it. Again, it's got its issues that both Scott and Stephen have, and myself have expounded on throughout the course of the show. But at its core, the reason why I can still enjoy it is because the idea behind this particular What If story is a great one. And we're dealing with my two favorite characters in fiction rolled into one book and one character even. And so that excites me, and that will always, you know, I will always revisit this every once in a while. I just have a lot of fun with it. And you know who would be, as we end off, before we end off and do the sign off, you know who would play this particular version perfectly? Cool. Ben Affleck, because he's played both George Reeves' Superman and Batman. So why not? I could see it. But that's it. 3.5 out of 5 for me. That brings the show to a close. Scott, if people want, first of all, thank you again for gracing us with your presence on the show. It was nice to get you on for a DC-related topic, finally. If people want to follow you online, how do they do that? Give your social media.
You can find me on Twitter at ScottDC27. You can find my show at DC Film Squadcast. You can go to our website, squadcastmedia.com, where you find the entire network of shows. And we're also on Vero and Facebook. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/squadcastmedia.
Fantastic. Steven, if people want to talk with you about Batman, Superman, or anything else we cover on our various podcasts, where can they do that?
All the things we cover.
Yeah,
you can follow me at SteveBob1984 on Twitter, and the page for the podcast is at MMNPDC.
Awesome. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Adam_LeesFan. And if you want to talk on Facebook, we have the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. Go there, request admittance into the group, and either myself or one of my co-hosts will add you, and we can continue the conversation there. We hope you enjoyed this comic book review. We've pledged to do some more comic book reviews over the course of these shows, and we will continue to do that. But we want to wish you well, whether you're listening to this on a weekday or weekend. And we want you to remember that Batman and Superman are forever, from the first bullet that killed the Waynes to the last moment on Krypton. So long, everybody.
Faster than a speeding bullet. Ow! More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Holy hole in a donut!
I never said thank you.
And you'll never have to.